Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. All aboard that big flying boat down in the North Atlantic have been rescued by the Coast Guard. For a story about this highly dramatic rescue, the result of daring work and hard work, we've scheduled a direct report from the USS Bibb early in the program. We also hope to bring in direct word concerning a new hurricane now striking the South Atlantic coast, a report on the strike in Paris, late word from Washington, and a special report from Boston. Now your announcer.
If you have an important job, I know you don't just go along from day to day forgetting about it, letting it take care of itself. And yet that's what too many people these days are doing with everybody's most important job, the job of being a good and active American citizen. Today, when so many countries of the world stand at the crossroads between freedom and dictatorship, it is of vital importance that we set the world an example by making our form of government work better than ever. And we can't make it work better unless each one of us makes active use of our liberties day after day. Just remember that a lazy America cannot long remain a free America, because freedom is everybody's job. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
Besides the story of the flying boat Bermuda Queen, from which all passengers have now been successfully removed, planes figure in news from two other points. A Navy plane en route from Miami to the Naval Air Station at Key West made a forced landing beside a grounded freighter some 60 miles from its destination, and the pilot was taken off. In the rugged mountain country of Colorado and Utah, the Army is starting an organized search for a transport plane missing during a severe storm. Seven men are reported to have been aboard the big ship, which the Army fears crashed during the night. And now we're going to attempt to hear direct from the scene of the rescue of the passengers on that flying boat, a task completed this morning. We switch to the USS Bibb in the North Atlantic. Well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We can't bring it in sufficiently, clearly enough for it to be understandable and to give a true picture of what has occurred up there in the North Atlantic. Instead, I'll have to do the best I can to fill you in. It won't be quite the dramatic account we had hoped for, but the rescue of all passengers and the crew members aboard that giant flying boat that was forced down in the Atlantic yesterday has been completed. Word that everybody had been transferred safely to the Coast Guard cutter, the Bibb, came less than 2 hours ago. As a matter of fact, it was 10 minutes after six this morning, our time. With the coming of darkness last night, as you may recall, the rescue operation had to be abandoned, with 18 persons still aboard the flying boat, the Bermuda Sky Queen. And then that dramatic rescue was renewed this morning. And a terse message from the Bibb, just a short while later, brought the news that all 62 passengers and seven crew members were safe. The captain of the cutter, which is an international weather ship actually, has recommended in his message sent this morning that that big plane be destroyed. And the Coast Guard is now trying to get in touch with agents of the airline that operates the Sky Queen to get permission to destroy the now abandoned plane. Out there, of course, it's called a menace to navigation by the Coast Guard. 17 men and a woman remained aboard the plane during the night. And the heavy seas that had hampered the rescue work abated a bit this morning, and that enabled the transfer to be made as quickly as it was. Yesterday, those waves swelled up to 35 feet, and rescue operations were indeed those of peril. At one time, a raft carrying 15 persons turned over. They had to be pulled out of the water, and that job was completed successfully. They were all pulled out safely. This morning, the waves were down from 6 to 12 feet. Doesn't make it exactly an easy job, but they finished it, and finished it in good shape, so a nod to the Coast Guard. A new storm has whipped up off the Atlantic coast, and hurricane warnings are now flying along the coastal areas of Georgia and the Carolinas. A central point in the path of that storm is the city of Savannah. So for news from the scene, here's Jimmy Woods at station WSAV, Savannah, Georgia.
It is now 4 minutes past eight in Savannah, Georgia, and this morning's freak hurricane has just passed south of Savannah in all its screaming fury. Up until 25 minutes before this broadcast, Savannah lay directly in the path of the 90-mile-an-hour storm. Now, according to the Weather Bureau, the eye of the storm has veered slowly to the south, and for the moment, Savannah seems to be out of any imminent danger. Even as I speak, I see the streets below me littered with debris and smashed store windows. WSAV and other radio stations took to the air early this morning with emergency bulletins and frequent advisories on the progress of the tropical storm, which threatened to strike Savannah almost without warning. Sound trucks were pressed into service, and by 5 o'clock this morning, all Savannah was aroused and making hasty preparations against the big blow. Red Cross and National Guard units were alerted for emergency duty, evacuating residents from the low beach areas and the many islands surrounding the Georgia coastline. All Savannah's public buildings were thrown open to shelter these evacuees, and for several hours this morning, those buildings were jammed to the doors. The emergency crews were well organized, and our people remained composed and as calm as one could expect them to be in the face of a tropical hurricane. No casualties have been reported up to this time, and with the barometer slowly rising, it would seem that Savannah has weathered the hurricane with a minimum of damage. This is Jimmy Woods in Savannah.
Across the Atlantic, the strike of transportation workers in the French capital continues. We hear news of it now from Paul Archinard in Paris.
300 army trucks from the French zone of occupation in Germany arrived today to help cope with the transport problem of Paris. Even armored bank trucks have been mustered to carry Paris workers to their jobs. Bicycles are everywhere seen carrying two and even three people, and it's no time to travel alone in a private car. Too many forlorn workers need a lift. The transport tie-up in Paris is complete. 6 million people, that's the number of tickets sold daily by bus and subway services, are stranded in Greater Paris. The government has announced that it will not pay strikers for the days they quit work. An appeal has been made for volunteer drivers to run the regular bus lines, and specialists from the public transport services have been called in a special meeting this afternoon. They may be requisitioned to help in easing this increasingly unpopular strike of transportation. There have been no conflicts between the strikers and the population so far, but last night the police was obliged to repulse minor invasions of sit-downers from several bus depots. With more strikes due to break within the next 48 hours, a political motive is sought for this untimely trouble. A projected plan to reduce government expenses is endangered, and it is feared here that financial aid from the United States may be discouraged. This, according to informed circles, would respond very nicely to the communist campaign against the Marshall Plan. In any case, the struggle between the government and the communists, which began when the latter were ousted from the cabinet last fall, has come out in the open, and the Ramage cabinet is now meeting with President Auriol to decide on further measures to be taken. This is Paul Archinard in Paris.
Back home, and to get the latest about food conservation, here's Lee Feed in Washington.
This morning, with the cost of living zooming merrily along, apparently to another new record, Mr. Luckman's food-saving program seems to be barely inching along. The bakers yesterday didn't come up with any definite grain-saving program, and Luckman could only report that the bakers are considering changes in wasteful selling habits, cutting down the size of loaves, and so on. Today, he meets with the brewers again, who say they do have a definite program. The head food saver wasn't satisfied with the last proposition he got from the beer and ale man. And apparently the second Meatless Tuesday wasn't exactly a 100% success. Here in town, 16 out of 20 restaurants within 5 blocks of the Luckman headquarters were serving meat last night. Some said customers demanded meat. Last night, the Wisconsin State Restaurant Association voted to turn down the Meatless Eggless plan in favor of food-saving ideas of their own. So Mr. Luckman finds the going rugged. As a result of confabs inside his own committee, he's eased up on the meatless plan to the extent of blessing the eating of liver, kidney, brain, heart, pig's feet, and pig's knuckles, and so on Tuesday. As for the cost of living, with cash wheat over $3 a bushel, the highest since 1920, the Associated Press wholesale measuring figure shows the HCFL just barely below the peak it reached last month and going up. Otherwise, this morning, we hear that Undersecretary of State Will Clayton has resigned but may be persuaded to stay on through the Havana Trade Conference to begin next month. This is Lee Feed in Washington.
In Boston, Secretary of State Marshall today makes the first address of his career before a labor convention. For this story, Chick Morris of Station WBZ, Boston.
That spotlight which has been swinging back and forth between the two great national labor conventions, the CIO here in Boston and the AFL in San Francisco, will be focused on Secretary of State George C. Marshall here in the Hub City today as he gives the story of current American foreign policy to the CIO gathering, his first speech before a labor convention. He is expected to try hard to woo the CIO into support of the Marshall Plan, which incidentally was first presented by Mr. Marshall in a commencement day speech at Harvard last June. After the Marshall address today, the CIO convention of 600 delegates representing 6 million Americans organized in the CIO will debate foreign policy. A resolution calling for unity of the big powers and American economic aid to other nations is expected to pass. But convention observers predict lively debate and discussion beforehand, including sharp criticism of some phases of United States foreign policy. Unless the Marshall speech is greeted with unexpected enthusiasm, the convention will probably take a sidestep or two and refrain from giving specific endorsement to the Marshall Plan. Publication of resolutions and a speech by Secretary of Labor Louis B. Schwellenbach were highlights of the convention's second day. This is Chick Morris in Boston.
At another labor convention, this one the AFL conclave in San Francisco, it's reported that John L. Lewis may still walk out with his 600,000 United Mine Workers. The action will come, if it does, over what is known as the District 50 controversy, and not as a result of what happened yesterday. Then, Lewis lost his bid to have the convention rule to retain the post of vice president in its organizational setup. He made a bitter speech, his first at the convention, as he defended his refusal to sign the Taft-Hartley Law non-communist affidavits, a stand which led to the proposal that the office of vice president be abandoned by the CIO so that Lewis' refusal to sign would not affect the entire organization. His outburst notwithstanding, the convention promptly voted against him in the liveliest session of the present convention. In Kokomo, Indiana, officials say 2 8-year-old boys tampered with a railroad switch and caused derailment of a Pennsylvania passenger train. Minor injuries were suffered by 2 passengers and 3 members of the crew. Near Hadley, New York, a forest fire in a heavily timbered area has been brought under control after an all-night fight by volunteers. In Los Angeles, former Representative Ramspeck of Georgia, now official of an air transport association, has proposed a Democratic slate of President Truman and Representative Sam Rayburn of Texas as his running mate. In the same California city, a company, American Electric Motors Incorporated, has announced a plan to give employees who have completed 10 years service 1 year vacations with pay. The company, which has 50 full-time employees, was started in 1939 to produce electrical motors for the Army and Navy, reorganized in 46, and the first of the remarkable vacations will consequently come in 56. Well, in Hollywood, there was a real fire at one of the studios yesterday. Damage is estimated to have reached $200,000, a good round sum. However, the so-called Hollywood touch was present. It seems that cameramen on hand to film another scene turned their lens on the blaze and filmed it for use in another movie some other day. Well, we'll have more news in just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. In the meantime, here is your announcer.
The sign of the red feather means a helping hand. That's right, day in and day out, all through the year, the red feather services of your community chest work to benefit everybody in your community. Half the people by direct aid, the other half indirectly, through the betterment of community conditions as a whole. Boys and girls organizations, summer camps, day nurseries, clinics, hospitals, these are only a few of the 12,000 ways that the community chest helps 1,000 American cities and towns every year. There is only one community chest campaign, only one combined appeal instead of many separate requests. So this year, when you are asked to contribute to the community chest, be as generous as you possibly can. You give to the community chest once a year. The community chest gives to you and your neighbors all year long. Remember, everybody benefits, everybody gives. Again, back to the newsroom.
In the international news this morning, police sources in Palestine say Arab underground groups are becoming more active throughout the Holy Land as a result of their dissatisfaction with the UN proposals for partition of Palestine. This morning, former Secretary of State Burns is on the record with a good deal about a variety of subjects in his newly published memoirs, in which he says, among other things, that Russia must learn that the world is not going to allow any one nation to veto peace on earth. Then there is Winston Churchill's statement of last night, in which he said that at some moment or other, Russia and her satellites might quit the United Nations, but that he thought peace should continue, even if Russia did at some future date walk out of the UN and create a two-world system. And that seems to be the story, folks. I'm glad we could get together. This is John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.